This podcast is a part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not reflect those of other podcasts or affiliates of this show or Gunna Geek. Check out other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Get ready, because the geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
You guys suck.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 126 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we wade once more into the world of wishful thinking and wild fanatical speculation and make unrequited demands that our most beloved characters lost be given a science fiction renaissance. We want them back, Mr. Moffat. We want them all back. In the GPR studios this evening, my name is Keir. Joining me, as always, is my partner in time, Jay. How are you this evening, sir?
I just want my characters back.
It's okay. Minuj. And over there, weeping and rocking slightly back and forth in a corner, is Haley. Haley, come back over here, please.
They're only mostly dead.
Otherwise, we have to go through their pockets for loose change. What's going on this week, Haley?
Well, with the news of some key characters returning for Series 9, we've decided to take the postulation a step further and discuss these individuals we most expect to see, or would most like to see regardless, return to the series to either stand beside or square off against the 12th Doctor.
So this one is legally distinct from the episode that we did a little recently about just, you know, our favorite pairings that we want to see. And this is more just, who do we want to see in Series 9? Specifically, so who do we want to be brought back for this particular season?
Yeah, we're at that point in the break period where production for the first block has started on the next episodes for Series 9, and now we get to really start doing some postulation and saying, oh well, wouldn't it be great if, or do you really think we're going to see, you know, so and so?
Yeah, because we never regret those kind of statements.
No, of course not. No, it's when you start putting quarters down on these things that it starts getting ugly. But, you know, they fall into various camps. It could be the, you know, oh, there's a really good shot that you could see, you know, character XYZ, or you're off your nut if you think you're going to see, you know, LMNOP.
Right.
So we figured we'd take a shot at it, and we opened up the floodgates to the listeners as well. We got some good feedback for this week, so I think we got some fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. So the way that we're breaking this down for the first part here is that we decided, okay, who are the realistic choices that we could possibly see in Series 9? Not that we expect to, but that it's possible that they could come back.
Without too much of a storyline tumult.
Right.
Okay.
And then the next classification would be not all that realistic choices. So these are the ones that, you know, you would either have to retcon their death or do some serious timey-wimey stuff or something along those lines.
Or pull them from the fringes of canon, too.
Yeah, yeah. Just a couple. And then the last one being, you know, just the completely not going to happen ever, but dang, wouldn't it be cool characteristics.
Yeah. All right. So we want to start with the ones that are mostly realistic?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the first character we got on the list, and this is the one that most everyone is going to be, you know, kind of questioning whether or not we'll see again, because it's Moffat and people don't stay dead, is Danny Pink.
Right. Because, I mean, when you spend half a season minimum, building a romantic interest, which is, you know, something that, that Moffat is wont to do because he likes to have some heartstrings involved with his drama and so forth. Dead is not always dead. So, you know, and as far as grounding it or allowing it to still possibly happen, where do we understand Danny's consciousness to physically, or physically, it's a poetry's word. Where do we understand that Danny's consciousness currently resides? Is it still within the nether sphere? Has it jumped beyond the veil? He still reaches back using the bracelet technology, so he's still somewhere that is scientifically connected.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing, is it's that thing where, you know, he formed the little rift to put the boy back through or whatever, and it's like, well, it all gets a little bit squidgy at that point. Like, before it was like, okay, no, he was stored on a hard drive and he was downloaded into a Cyberman body, and so it, you know, all this stuff makes sense, and then he goes and blows up and now he's somewhere that he can manipulate space-time, and doesn't
have a corporeal form.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but the reason why I still think this can stay within the realistic choice parameters is because we're just saying that the character may make an appearance again, even if it's in flashbacks or visions or dream states or something of that sort. You know, so he comes as like the guiding conscience to Clara or something like that.
I was going to say, I think the flashbacks are more realistic, more plausible than, you know, Moffat bringing him back from the dead.
Yeah, probably. So as far as appearances go, it's a very viable opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So the next one, I actually put this one on the list because I would love to see the return of Brian Pond Williams. I want to see Rory's dad come back. And I figure there's two ways that you can go about it. A, you can have what I think would be a really interesting story is have the doctor run into him and have him not completely okay with the way that things went down. And then you have a confrontation between this new, you know, non-caring, very, you know, logic-driven doctor and an emotionally, you know, driven, completely heartbroken father. And you've got them going at it, and, you know, Brian is going to be, you know, well, why did you leave them? And what, you know, this is all your fault kind of thing, and very accusatory. And then you've got the doctor who went through this loss, who felt the guilt for, you know, hundreds of years, obviously. But then in this new body is not so keen on those kind of emotions. So I think that could be a really interesting confrontation there.
Okay. You said that was one. What was number two?
Two is having him get to the point where he accepts the fact that Rory's there. And, like, you know, if at the end of the little deleted scene that we saw that was so...
with the son.
Yeah. You know, have him get to the point where he has accepted it. He's moved on with his life. And have him just bump into the doctor again and be like, hey, you know, and then you could do almost like a one or two episode thing of him, like, you know, just getting to know this doctor again.
Hmm. I worry about the opening of old wounds with anything that taps back into the Williams family.
Yeah.
It's just, it's something where, especially when you bring Brian into it, because he just, there was nothing you could say contrary to his character. He was just upstanding from the start and just so genuinely enjoyable that at this point, anything that actually gives him cognizance of the fact that he's dealing with the doctor after the loss of his son and daughter-in-law, it's just so much pain that it could be a real detraction, yeah. I think.
But that could also be used to great effect if you have the doctor hitting one of those moments where he's just like, you know, being particularly surly or whatever, and then you have Brian come in who you understand his heartbreak and you understand where he's coming from, and you would, like you said, you can't say anything negative about him. And he starts tearing the doctor apart. And
we haven't had any instances where Capaldi's doctor has really referenced the Ponds at all.
Yeah.
So that's opening up a whole can of worms right there with his cognizance of companion's past.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think with the exception of the end of Deep Breath, they've really tried to make a point of moving on with this doctor and not going back as much to the previous companions.
Yeah, right. And that's what I was going to say, is it's not just the Williams. He hasn't said anything about Rose or Martha or, you know, Sarah Jane or anyone. So it's just as likely that you're going to get a reference to them as you are to anyone else.
Mm.
Okay. I think this is going to happen? Not in a million years. I think that Brian is done. I think that we've moved on and we're never going to hear from him again. But it's one of those things that, you know, just postulating, I'm like, that could be an interesting at least scene.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So who do we have next?
Well, here's one. I know you would put this in the list, and we actually had some listeners that had chimed into this effect as well. I'm struggling with this one, and that's Jamie. So, and it's kind of humorous because if you ask Fraser Hines, he's ready to come back in a heartbeat. Although he wasn't entirely certain whether or not he would want to return as Jamie McCrimmon or just make a cameo appearance mm-hmm. on the show in general. I think he'd just love to be involved with the program again. But if you actually want to follow through and see what they've ended up doing with Jamie's character as he has made some other appearances and sort of hopped around a little bit with some of the other Doctor's iterations through the audio content and specifically the comic content, mm-hmm. the comic content has seen him to his death.
Right.
He actually sacrifices himself and speeds up the last years of his life. He sort of gives up the last of his human existence. So you see his conclusion, I think, involved with the sixth Doctor at that particular iteration. Yeah. So it would have to. The issue I see with it, I mean, you could obviously insert it anywhere. You could have something that just suddenly drops, mm-hmm. you know, Capaldi back in, you know, into 14th century Scotland or something like that. But you've also got the issue of, if you really want it to be something significant for the viewers, you have to give a little bit of explanation of Jamie's background as well, which just takes time.
Yeah.
So to do it justice, especially somebody who's been one of the longest running companions in the televised history.
Yeah. No, I can see that. But at the same time, there's been plenty of times where they have dipped back into the history of the show and brought it forward with minimal explanation so that people who aren't, you know, versed in the classic series can be caught up, but still have enough depth in there that people that do know the backstory can get a lot out of it. So wow. They've gotten really good at doing that. And I think that that's one of the instances where you can say, hey, no, this is the, you know, a companion that he had in the past, and, you know, just bare minimum so that people understand, okay, past companion, I'll have to go back and get the backstory if I want everything. But then for those of us that actually know the whole story, we're good to go. That's all we need. We're like, oh, okay, Jamie, yes, let's go. And you can just move forward from that point.
Okay.
But as far as the comics go, it's, you know, Doctor Who continuity is a contradiction in terms.
True.
So it's not what I don't feel like the fact that they referenced him dying in a comic book, you know, when there's so much of the classic series that they hand wave and just ignore completely to, you know, to get around it for compelling stories in the current run. I don't think that having, you know, a one comic issue that mentions it is enough to say, no, we can't do it. That's, you know, off the books completely because we're done with them. If they wanted to bring him back, they could easily do it. And like you said, just, you know, have it be at an earlier point or something.
True. I don't know. I just thought it might be something where it'd be just as kind of endearing and just as rewarding to be able to have a moment where they happen to be dashing through Glasgow or something like that, and Fraser Hines is a shopkeeper or something yeah. of that sort. Just gets, you know, a moment or two on screen, but you know,
yeah,
that's a little...
that could be fun. But actually, who was it? Sean on Facebook actually. He agreed with us and said that the Doctor should visit an elderly Jamie in 1795 who runs a tavern in New Jersey with Ben and Polly, who are still young and want to get back to Gatwick Airport in 1966.
Let's just fold it all in and on itself. It's like a lotus of time. So many leaves.
But I mean, that's the thing, is you can easily have him just like, you know, he doesn't even have to be able to recognize the Doctor. You can have the Doctor recognize him. And, you know, have Jamie, you know, wax nostalgic about this time that he spent traveling with this outlandish character, and, you know, have the Doctor get choked up for a minute or something. And that's all you need. You don't need to bring it back as a full-time companion or a recurring character or anything like that.
Oh, that's true.
Just that touching moment where the Doctor recognizes just how much he meant to this companion.
Mm. That could be something very beneficial for Capaldi's doctor, to let him see some of the positive repercussions he's had with people that he just brushed up against over his past.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we get the opportunity to sort of play around with some that you put this on here. I'm going to let you run with this one. And I know, Haley, I know this is one that you've chimed in the past too, when we started discussing this episode more in depth. And that's the idea of the DNA crafted doctor's daughter, Jenny.
Yeah.
What about the repercussions of having this pseudo time lady out there, bringing her back around now after what, 4 seasons of silence with regards to her character not even being name checked?
I think they didn't kill her for a reason. Like, okay. I don't see them leaving her floating out there and never addressing it again. But maybe. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be outside of the realm of possibility for the show.
With the exception of this one most recent.
Yeah at the end of.
Yeah, when Clara's doing her whole, her I am the doctor rundown thing.
Right. Yeah, all right. To be fair, I think that the reason they didn't kill her off is because RTD had this obsession with, if there's a character, I'm going to make a spinoff of it. But this is one of those characters that you can have her come back at some random point and be like, oh no, I was off doing this adventure. And, maybe
name check something. Maybe Missy wants to do something with her. I don't know.
Well, I'm saying name check something that, name check one of the doctor's adventures that she was involved in tangentially. She was off on one of the Cybermen cruisers that got blown up when the doctor was delivering a message via Rory. And have her be like, oh no, I was on the Cybermen thing and it blew up around me and I had to escape. And you can tie her in on the fringes, or you can have it be, a completely, separate thing.
Or do a Blink style episode where the doctor's not really in it and it's her adventure and you see where her path is almost crossing his but doesn't quite do it.
But one of the main things that I've heard about this is that you can't bring back Georgia Moffat because everybody wants Georgia Moffat because she's absolutely adorable, but you can't bring her back because she's so closely related to Tennant. No pun intended. But the thing is, it's just because she didn't change her face when she instantly regenerated, easy to hand wave. No, because she was spliced from his DNA or something. It took a few days or something, and she changed her face later.
Well, Tennant, he regenerated once without changing his face too. So
back in himself.
Yeah. So you can hand wave it a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of ways to say bring in a brand new actress, say no, this is the same character, and we're moving forward from it from here. And that can be a very compelling story that you can bring back time and time again. Look what they did with River Song. Mm-hmm. You kill her off in the first episode and then bring her back all the time.
Or maybe, a character we have seen that was in one episode. Oh, surprise, that was actually the doctor's daughter.
Yeah. Mm. The doctor's daughter was actually Tasha Lem. Oh, wait, no, that just gets creepy after a minute. Never mind. I didn't think that one through. I'm sorry.
Well, speaking of creepy, we have the opportunity, a perfect opportunity, and this is one that a lot of our listeners chimed in on, to take one of our most clinical, cold, logical, systematic doctors that we've had in some time and put him up against a counterpart who is equally calculating. And we're not talking about, the master here, but that would be Davros.
Yeah.
We haven't seen in quite some time.
Not since the end of the Tennant era.
Correct. And has no reason why we couldn't spin him back around again. There's all sorts of unexplored territory with his character. I know Big Finish has run with phenomenal storylines in that regard. But as far as televised, we could have a phenomenal tête-à-tête between these two.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, something equivalent of what we had, with Baker and Davros back in the day.
Yeah, that's very true. And I love seeing the incredibly sharp characters taking on Davros, the ones that are very quick witted and they, logic driven, and the ones that can think on his level instead of just reacting or something like that. The ones where it's, as soon as they face each other, you see this entire chess mass breaking down in a matter of seconds. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to which one anticipated the first move, you know.
Well, yeah, the better adversarial arrangements are going to bring out better things in the characters as well. So the Davros isn't just the Dr. Evil character,
right?
You know, running around with his megamaniacal plan that always goes awry and he wings off in a spaceship at the end of it all. So if you get something that really becomes that chess match, as you said, you know, that's the kind of thing that will allow you to use a character that has been utilized on many occasions, but never grows stagnant because you're upping the ante every time. You know, and I think we can now deal with scripts of the complexity and the intellectual level that still remains action driven and so forth. You can still have your explosions. You can still have your Dalek war, laser fights in the streets and so forth if you want to. But there still has to be this, this puppet master in control. And he's just a phenomenal character to utilize.
Yeah. And speaking from experience, it's actually quite unsettling seeing him in person. We actually, at Gallifrey 1 last weekend, we ran into a cosplayer who, I mean, he went full tilt. He had the chair and the mask and everything was just pitch perfect. Mm-hmm. And I found this out after the fact, actually, that this was a Phil Cannon from the Who's He podcast. And he constantly goes for hyper-realistic or hyper-accurate cosplay. So if you've ever gotten a chance to see him on in any of his costumes and stuff, they're fantastic. But this year he did Davros, and you can see a picture of Kira and I facing off against him. And it's one of those things that even though, you know, it's all in fun and everything, seeing him up close, it was like, man, this is... it's a little bit creepy.
Yep, everything down to the light consoles on his vessel there. It's funny, when we started saying, oh, we should get a picture for everything we should use. It's the first thing he does is reach for our hands.
Yeah.
But staying within the Dalek vein.
Yeah, so one of the characters that we got introduced to in Series 8 that we all kind of want to see how this plays out is Rusty, the quote-unquote good Dalek.
I'm going to let you run with this one.
I want to see the aftermath of this. I want to see what happens when Rusty gets reintroduced into the Dalek collective and starts to actually have to interact with these. Does he go spy and start taking off one or two on the edges where he's not going to get noticed? Or is this like as soon as he gets back, it's full-blown invasion force kind of thing?
Or he gets found out immediately and it becomes the Dalek rendition of Reservoir Dogs.
I don't know. I think that this was an interesting enough departure from the typical Dalek character that I wouldn't mind seeing how it plays out after one or two more stories.
Okay.
Remind me again, how often do they have to use the Daleks to keep the rights?
Once per series.
Per season.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to see another Dalek story, or not necessarily Dalek story, but... you Dalek, have to at least see a Dalek on the screen. Like, I know there are years that they got around it. Like with Matt Smith, one year it was just he came up across a Dalek that was almost destroyed, and that was the only time you saw one that entire series. And so it's as long as they show up on screen,
just to satisfy the contract with Terry Nation's estate.
Yeah. Okay. So, then there's one that's been people have been begging for this for ages, and that's the return of Sally Sparrow.
I think we missed the boat on this one.
Yeah. I held a torch aloft for a long time, but, and I'd love to be proven wrong, but I think that door has closed.
Yeah, very likely. I mean, you've got Carey Mulligan who plays Sally Sparrow, who is a huge name in the UK, and she's off doing all kinds of other things and winning awards and just, I don't think she's going to come back. This was one of those like, hey, yeah, I'd love to be on Doctor Who. Let's give it a shot. But at the same time, it would be very interesting, like we said with Jamie, to have the Doctor come back across and see, this one person that he only had like an actual, what was it, like 45 seconds to a minute actual physical interaction with, and see how her life has played out. You know, either she's, doing tremendously well and that whole adventure just really set off a chain of events that set her up nicely, or did it tear her life apart? You know, was it was it almost like the Gwen Cooper effect, where it's like once you've seen it, you can't give it up and you have to go more, and it just devolves from there.
So think about that. Think about what if they did an entire episode that was devoted towards the positive and negative repercussions of brushes with the doctor, and you get all of these face checks with people that have either, gone on to greatness or have descended into madness as a result of even the slightest brush with the Time Lord. That'd be a really troubling episode.
It could be. I mean, that's one of those things I could see.
Isn't that kind of what they did in that one episode that was terrible with the fan club?
Love and Monsters.
Yes, that one.
To a certain degree. Yeah.
It wasn't a horrible episode. Sorry, I'm going to defend that episode to my dying breath.
Okay. You're even going to defend the final sequence?
No,
the,
I'm not going to defend the pavement square. No, but
got my.
Not saying that everything was home run. No, that could actually, like, if you think about the arc that we had in series 8, where the doctor's trying to figure out if he's a good person and that kind of thing, that's the kind of story that could spin off into something like that, where the doctor's like, no, I need to go and see what kind of impact I've had, and have him hunting these people down and seeing what their life has become, and see the dichotomy that happens between them. That could actually be a really good, like, introspective episode for when you really need to investigate the person of the doctor.
Well, they'd have to get to a real comfortable spot in the season to be able to pull off a kind of an introspective and cerebral episode like that.
Yeah, yeah, very true.
Or right after the departure of Clara. He wants to see what kind of effect he's having on people.
Yep.
That's actually what I was thinking, is like one that's between companions or something.
When he's out shopping.
All right, so the next one here that we've got, and it's one that almost is too obvious at this point, is River Song.
Yeah.
I want her back. Baby, come back.
She's not terribly busy on Arrow, so.
have we seen the end of her story? That's one of those things that when the last time we saw her, we asked that question of, is this actually the end? And I think we all agree that it could possibly be. Like, if the story ended right there, it wouldn't seem like an abrupt thing. It could be a natural end, but it's not something that was set in stone. Like, no, this is the last time we're going to see her. It's clear and cut. And I think that we could see her come back again.
Because of the sheer construct of her character and the nature of her interactions, you've written yourself the opportunity to tap in anytime you really wanted to. But if you did, it would have to be unshakably justified. And the moment it strays from that and is not just being done for gratuitous appearances, if those cracks show, the viewers will eat them all alive.
Yeah.
Well, she's a divisive character anyways. Bringing her back or not ever bringing her back, either way, you're going to get hate.
Yeah, people are going to be upset no matter what the decision. But. This is one of those things. Like, every time I thought about one of these characters, I started thinking, what kind of story could we see them in? And River's one of those. Like, the story that I would almost want to see is that this iteration of the Doctor is one that she did not get along with. Like, this was a point in their marriage where they were just going their separate ways, and I want to see that the arguments between them and the fights that they get into, even though there is a foundation of love underneath that you can see, like, it's when you see those couples that fight and you're like, why are you two still together? And you understand that there's something deeper than the argument that's going on. And I'm like, I would love to see that, because both of these actors are tremendous, especially when they're, at full volume.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if this, if this was like the midlife crisis field for them and he's off. I don't, even though those kind of moments could be rewarding from a viewer's perspective, just to be able to watch the two of them kind of just, just get out their forks and knives and devour scenery for a bit. Mm-hmm. But as far as what it would do within the script, going back to the idea of what are you doing with a story that requires them to cross paths again, or the repercussions of the fact that they do, or again, going back to one of my original points, that makes it feel like you're doing it not for the sake of, it's justified not just being done because, wouldn't it just shake things up?
Yeah.
If we got Alex on the set for 15 minutes,
Well, I mean, how many times did they, you know, go, oh, did we have this adventure or have you run into that or whatever? And it's, you can have it be, you know, that River is, you know, doing her thing and the Doctor happens to stumble across, you know, whatever she's involved in. And this is one of those times that they have an adventure together that the Doctor hasn't encountered. And it's, I don't think it has to be a, no, we're bringing her back for this reason. As long as it makes sense that she is there for her own personal reasons or whatever, then I don't think it needs to be evident that we brought her back so that she could interact in this particular way.
Right, right. Well, they've left the door open. He's at least referenced her by name on at least one occasion. So,
which I hate that because I feel like that's the only time that we're going to get it. But
see, I feel like she needs to interact with more doctors because if she just met 10 once and then all of her other interactions were with 11, why would it be such a big deal that she hadn't seen a particular face before?
Mm. Yeah. Especially when, you know, she says, I've seen you through all of your iterations and whatnot. And I'm sorry that a little, you know, offshoot, what was it, like a game or a comic or something where she interacted with previous doctors. I'm like, that's, no, you need to, I want to actually see her interact with other doctors on the show.
Yeah.
But, all right. So the next one, and this was actually brought up by a listener as well. Michael from over at the Companions of the Doctor said, seeing that Kate Stewart's return is officially confirmed, I would like to see Ian Chesterton seeing that a return to the Coal Hill School is in the cards. And that this is one that we actually talked about when we first found out that Clara was working at Coal Hill School again, mm-hmm. saying that and the seeing his name up on the thing as headmaster and whatnot.
Yeah.
I would love to see this and almost the same thing that we were saying with Jamie before. You know, it doesn't even have to be one of those things where he recognizes the Doctor. Just right. bring him back, have it be like a little cameo where the Doctor bumps into him and gets all, you know, nostalgic for a minute or something. And I feel like
that's all very one-sided.
Like he comes into Claire's classroom, yells at her for not having her grades turned in yet, and walks out.
Yeah, I'd want a little more interaction than that. But yeah,
Think about this. Think about where we are in the storyline right now. So maybe Clara goes through a kind of a depressive period in the wake of Danny's loss. So you've got moments where she's sort of brought in on, you know, faculty consult and so forth, and she has to sit down with Chesterton to try to get a little bit of a, you know, if you need personal time, if you need, you know, whatever the case may be. But it doesn't even necessarily cross paths with the Doctor, but it's just his appearance in a scene or two as he's mm-hmm. sort of helping his staff along.
Yeah.
I'd be satisfied with it from a viewer standpoint, you know, just see him on screen, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, just bring William Russell back for a day of shooting. I'm sure he would be thrilled by that.
Mm. You know, well, I mean, he's been so intrinsically involved with audio recordings, you know, to great extent. I mean, I'm sure he'd take the opportunity for televised work again.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so who's the next one that we've got on the list?
Well, I put this on here because I was kind of interested. I've always been a little bit thrown by where things were left with Asylum of the Dalek. And the fact that Skaro was not the barren wasteland that we thought it was left, you know, as it was implied with the rages of the Time War. So when we find there is a Dalek Parliament in place and there is a Prime Minister, and granted they all got kind of atomized or what have you, but there is that role, there is the position of the Prime Minister Dalek, that one of them will step into that if that's the kind of the governmental hierarchy that they're maintaining right now. So as Haley mentioned, we've got to have the quick check with the Daleks at least once a season to satisfy the nation estate. So if this is kind of where we stand right now, if we are or are not going to go back and pursue the time lock and open that can of worms, we can still have this aspect of the 12th Doctor dealing with the Daleks on the outside of the lock that are apparently repopulating Skaro. So back to the PM.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think I just put it on here as one of the likely possibilities, because if you're going to bring the Daleks in at this point, this is one of the easiest ways to be able to have that, so they can have their kind of, you know, political strategizing and so forth, not to be taken too far from one that I threw on the not terribly realistic choices. It was just tangentially related to this, but we'll get to that shortly.
Yeah, no, I feel like the Prime Minister Dalek was just, I don't feel like it was something that had to be put in there. It was just like, oh, well, we'll say Prime Minister Dalek so that it gives some weight to what's actually going on. And I don't feel like it was actually something that was supposed to set up a type of government or whatever. And I always felt like it was just one of those titles that got thrown in just for the sake of having a title.
Well, I kind of felt that to a certain degree it was being used to establish the fact that even Moffat had conceded the resurgence of the Coppertop Daleks, mm-hmm. you know, the RTD Daleks, as opposed to the, you know, the Dalek Superior and all the
Skill, you know, Daleks.
Exactly. Yeah, your Lego set Daleks. So if that's just saying by sheer numbers that the repopulation of their ranks are following this very structured parliamentary order, but that's just, you know, that's kind of where that's headed at the moment. If you were to look at the fringes of the universe right now,
yeah, I would not mind seeing the Prime Minister Dalek come back if it was in a thing of he is waging a war. The Daleks, the Coppertop Daleks, are waging a war against the new paradigm Daleks,
right?
Like the new paradigm finally had enough numbers, and they're like, no, we're going to wipe out all the abominations. And so there's a war going on between these different factions of Daleks. And mm-hmm. then I
was something they've done in a lot of the extended content to great success. It's been a kind of a cool story to see a lot of the civil war within the Dalek ranks.
Yeah, because I mean, let's face it: if you have more than one type of Dalek on in a spot, they're going to try and wipe out the other one because clearly they're inferior, and
right,
it's just nature of the beast. But.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that could be a compelling story if you were going to go that route. But if we're just like, oh, look, here's a Dalek and he's got a title, so he's extra scary. It doesn't work so well.
No, it's back to the whole blood of the Daleks concept and what's pure, or what is the superior versus inferior derivations of the race.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of alien races and ones that we think might be seen again.
Here we go.
I put one on here that I think is necessary. And I didn't necessarily think that this is something that is likely. I just think it's due. And that's to see the Centaurans back as a formidable enemy. I've talked about this a few times as Strax gets goofier mm-hmm. and goofier. Not to take anything away from comedy relief, but I feel that to a certain degree it has undermined what used to be a go-to villain and has lost that.
Yeah, I want to agree with you on this because I think that it could be very, very entertaining to see, you know, Strax being the odd one out and Strax being completely separate from what the rest of the Centaurans are because we've grown comfortable with him and we understand Strax and we know how he works. And to see him as the counterpoint to how the Centaurans are actually supposed to be could be very effective.
Mm-hmm.
My hang up is the fact that I think that the damage has become too extensive at this point. I am not sure if, at least for new Whovians, if you can go back to having a Centauran as a viable villain. Because if you go back even to was it the Centauran stratagem and the two-parter in series 4?
Mm-hmm.
Even then, they were on the cusp of being straight up comic relief. Like they weren't really like it was one of those moments where you're like, wait, I'm supposed to take these guys seriously, really? Yeah.
As a new Whovian, I don't really have the distinct memory of them being scary. I have too much Strax in my head for that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know if it could be. I think there is a story to be told there. I think that it could possibly work, but I'm not sure if it's too late now.
Right. Okay.
So, all right. So the next one that we've got, we saw them return in the 50th anniversary, and we haven't heard anything from them since, is the Zygons.
Yeah. I just think they're usable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've been referenced and utilized in small doses throughout, and they're an interesting enough concept as far as the whole, you know, anytime you think of all the science fiction programs where the whole shapeshifter concept gets utilized. You know, it's just something that you can tap into and say, all right, well, you know, at any point when a character is acting completely erratically and completely non-true to form, and then the great reveal is, oh, it's been a Zygon all along, that suckerfish. So it's an easy use without necessarily shaking up or having to introduce new races that require a lot of additional explanation. We've given the groundwork.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing the Zygons return if they had a story that was written around them instead of being a Deus Ex Machina, which I feel like that's the way that it goes most of the time, is it's, hey, look, here's this story. We've written ourselves into a corner. Zygon.
Okay. Or if we get to see, well, all right. For those of you who want to go and pursue the Eighth Doctor adventures, you get some interesting Zygon use out there. But to flip what Jay just said is one where you're aware of the Zygon involvement all along, mm-hmm. and you as the listener are the only one aware of the placement of the Zygon. So it's like knowing that the double agent is there the entire time and wanting to, you know, grab the other characters by the shoulders and say, look closer.
But, right. Yeah. And that could be a lot of fun, especially if it were almost like a whodunit where, you know that there's a Zygon, but you don't know who the Zygon is.
Oh, that would be great. A Clue episode.
Yeah. I mean, make it a bottle episode. You've got six people that are all trapped in this area, and you know that one of them is a Zygon. And it doesn't even have to be the same one the entire time. That's the great thing.
Yeah.
Jones over there takes, Susan off into the corner and kills Susan and comes back as Susan. And then it's like, oh, Jones was killed. Oh, no. And it could be that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and for this to be the same episode that Missy came back in and Missy's the only one the Doctor knows isn't the Zygon, that would be fantastic.
That could, yeah. All right. So the next one, the last one that we've got on our realistic choices, and this has kind of gotten stretched, I think.
But, yep. That's why I just stuck it on there at the end. Oh, yeah. And those assholes.
Yeah. Rassilon and the Time Lords.
The worst boy band you'd ever want to hear from again.
Singing their new hit single. Yeah, no. This, if we have to get the How Did the Master Escape, it would make sense that we got a reoccurrence or at least a name check of these guys. Where does Rassilon and the High Council really fit into all of this? Because, the last time that we saw the Master before, the return of Missy, it was, all of them getting shoved back into the time lock. So how do we get one without the other?
Precisely. So this is just a matter of we're keeping it on the list there because if they do decide to address this aspect of the suspended script, or the suspended storyline, these guys are part and parcel. They're kind of unavoidable.
Yeah. All right. So now we'll go ahead and move on to the ones that aren't as readily available.
Yeah.
And the first one I put on here is Madame de Pompadour. And I don't really know why. I just really like that episode and I really like the character and I wouldn't mind seeing her come back.
It was a fantastic story. She's a really interesting character, but I think it was too perfectly tied up her back.
The story was complete. The story was absolutely complete, and I don't know how you could bring her back, and that's why she's on this list instead of the other one.
You just want it.
Yeah, because I want to see her come back, because she's pretty, and yeah.
Hereby also including this one on the completely no chance in hell list, simply for Jay's benefit.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Hey, but I got my picture taken with her last week, so I'm okay.
Yes, you did.
Ran into her at the restaurant at Gallifrey once.
Okay. Moving on. Not terribly realistic, but not out of the realm of possibility, simply because, the opportunity stands out there somewhere, is Susan Foreman.
Yeah.
Even if you were to include audiobook within canon, it's still viable.
Yeah, she's still kicking around. She's still living her life. We've had interactions with her descendants, and so you could bring her back. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you would really do it effectively.
That's the risk. You open the door to the demand for more explanation.
Yeah,
and this might be one of the things where you just kind of have to just say, you know what, I hope you enjoyed everything you've gotten so far. We're going to move on because it's just going to require some script bending that more people are going to be upset with than are going to be satisfied with. And it's just not worth, rolling those dice.
Yeah. So, and then the next one that we've got, and this is probably the most, well, I don't know, this is the most likely and yet most unlikely of the entire list, is the return of Osgood.
Dead is dead.
Yeah, but there was a Zygon copy somewhere. So I'm not saying that the Zygon is the one that got killed. I'm saying Osgood is dead. I think Moffat has like completely confirmed that, and I'm willing to accept it because it was great, but we did have a twin out there somewhere, so...
So she could come back.
Yeah, some Zygons actually, towards the end of their lifespan, have to stay within the last form that they choose.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So, I mean, and this is one of those, like, I don't want to undermine what was done, because it was a great moment, and it was very powerful. But I would love to see, you know, Osgood come back for a couple minutes just to take Missy down a peg. Like,
have I'll Missy tell you where you see Osgood back. In an ashtray.
Too soon, dude.
I'm
too
sorry. Soon. I had to. Did you give credit to Andre for his cosplay at Galley One? He's walking around with a t-shirt that just said, "This is my Osgood cosplay," and he was carrying a mason jar full of ashes with an asthma inhaler stuffed in it.
I did not see that.
He warned me at Elihu that he was going to do that he was putting it together. And
that is awful. Brilliant.
And then at the end of it all, his last day at Galley, because he stayed through to Monday or so, I believe, he went and like poured her ashes out on the curb or something. It's just,
well played, Andre. Well played.
Ouch.
All right, so the next one on the list, and I've heard this a number of times, and actually we had a couple listeners chime in on it too, is we want to see Jack Harkness come back.
But we won't see Jack Harkness come back.
No.
Well, there's contract reasons, but also until they wrap up Torchwood's dangling plot threads, we can't get any of those characters back.
Yeah.
I was thinking I would like to just see Gwyn pop in for a little bit, but
yeah,
she's stuck over in Miracle Day.
Well, but, if that even occurs.
Yeah.
I mean, based on all the panel discussions, the only thing that's really going on definitively within the Torchwood universe right now is the audio plays that John and Carol Barrowman are writing right now.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing that's sort of locked in and contracted at this point.
Well, yeah, Jeannie got to us on Twitter and said, "I'd love to see Harkness, but I don't think Moffat has any intentions to ever bring him back." Richard responded to that on Twitter and said, I think Harkness would be back in a Torchwood series before he'd be back on Who, which I, as Haley just said, that's probably the way it would have to go.
Yeah.
Deanna wrote in on Facebook and said, would love to see Captain Jack Harkness. I think it would be fun to watch the interaction between him and the 12th Doctor. And we've talked about that before. That's that's brilliant in the making right there.
Especially because of the fact that in that kind of sort of a scenario, Jack understands human nature so much more than the Doctor in a twisted view,
yeah.
But nonetheless.
But at the same time, it would almost be fun to see, like, you know, give each one of them a fork, which one can eat the most scenery first.
That's true. Or Jack giving the Doctor sexy tips. Here's how you're sexy. I don't do sexy.
You know, Jack trying to start off with something like that, and the Doctor's like, "Look, I don't even grasp the concept of a hug."
Or maybe not Jack Harkness exactly, but Face of Bo.
Yeah, somewhere mid
headless Jack
transition to Bo.
Jack, once he's been grabbed by the headless monks. So the next one on the list that we've got here.
Oh. Okay, I put this on here. I'm not saying I want to see Wilfred Mott again, but I want to see Wilfred Mott again.
Yes,
that's all I'm going to say. And this would be just a strictly cameo thing, just him and the telescope, and, you know,
yeah,
catching one more glimpse. That's all I want.
Yeah, you really can't do more than that, really. But the one of the things that I heard was someone saying, "Oh, it'd be great if the Doctor could, you know, go back and visit young Wilf during the war, something like that." And I'm like, part of the reason that Wilf worked so well was because of Bernard Cribbins. Because that you can't take that character away from Bernard Cribbins. That's who it is.
Yeah.
So if you tried to say, "Oh no, this young actor that we brought in is now going to carry the label," no one's going to buy it. We're all going to be like, no. Make it random soldier B and move on. I'm not going to buy the fact that this is Wilf.
Okay.
So it's one of those that you really do have to make sure that you've got the same actor. And then, as you said, it would have to be just a little cameo thing. And there's absolutely no purpose for it. So I don't think we're ever going to see it.
Right. Well, I put the next one on here simply because it's It's not terribly realistic. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I just really not certain how it may benefit. It would be Craig Owens. Our actor talent is going to be extremely busy running late night television for a while. But the only reason, because I've had some conversation with folks that said, you know, they absolutely love just the idea of having this very salt of the earth, grounded human character that can be utilized, that isn't in any way interested in space travel or anything of that sort. He wants a quiet life and keeps kind of getting thrust into all these greater things. but I think he's so intrinsically attached to Matt Smith's Doctor that I just can't see the dynamic working elsewhere.
That's true. But there's a way that we can bring him back. And Richard on Twitter actually wrote to us, and the way that this works is he says that we need to bring back Stormageddon, Dark Lord of All. Mm. And the way that you do this is a very Back to the Future 2, where the Doctor shows up at Craig's place of business and says, "You've got to come with me. There's a problem with your kid." And he whisks him off to the future where Stormageddon has actually taken over an entire sector of space. And it's just a wild romp where they're trying to, you know, contain this.
Well, it's either that or we end up with Stormageddon in his first years of primary school at Coal Hill. And he's this horrible, horrible kindergartner.
He keeps referring to the other students as peasants. Very disconcerting.
Plebeians.
All right. So the next one that we've got on the list here is Martha Jones as a unit rep.
Yeah, I mean, we last saw her kind of wandering off with Mickey out to kick some more butt and just be kind of, you know, awesome Martha. We've got, you know, UNIT is back in the picture in a much stronger position of prominence right now within the primary storylines. So it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that we could see her pass through.
And, you know, it would kind of be fun to see her come up against a Doctor and be like, "Oh, wait, you're not the young, attractive one that I was in love with. Well, how do I react now?"
I can't believe I was ever attracted to you.
Clara and her can bond over it and be like, "I know, right? What the heck were we seeing?" Yeah.
"I'm in the room. I can hear you." Well, in keeping with the whole idea of characters that have moved on to positions of power, not terribly realistic, but again, it could go along with the whole idea of finding Gallifrey again if they really wanted to bend some minds, and that's have Romana as in her position as the president of Gallifrey. If they ever get back to that.
Okay, now you've got it written down here, Romana 2, but we really don't need Romana 2. It could be Romana 8 for all we know at this point.
Oh, sure.
I mean, and that's one of the great things about this is you could just bring back random actor. You don't have to worry about, you know, cameos or anything like that. Just, hey, look, here's, you know, actor that we need to bring back. Look, you're Romana now. Mm-hmm. So this could very easily be done. Whether or not it will be, that's something different. But
Right. Last one I threw on here just as a not realistic choice because it strays entirely out of the televised material because it taps into the novels, the audiobooks, comics, and everything other than televised, pretty much every other format. And that's Betty, Dr. Bernice Summerfield. I mean, of such a successful companion to the Doctor along the way that she ended up with an entire spinoff series and has served kind of as the archetype for a lot of the more clever, intelligent, educated, titled, capable companions to follow.
You mean like everything Martha was supposed to be?
Yeah, pretty much. So it'd be just kind of interesting if they just had some sort of, because she went off and did her own work for quite some time. You know, there's still, you know, the ongoing storylines that can continue to use Betty stories. So it'd be kind of interesting, you know, other than the Night of the Doctor, you know, quick kind of name checks.
Yeah. All right. Well, sticking in the vein of awesome companions we'd like to see cross the aisle over into show canon, I want to see Lucy Bleedin' Miller.
I'd absolutely agree with you. I just don't know how they could possibly do it.
Oh, they can't, because if they did, and in case you haven't noticed, we've strayed into the completely not going to happen at all category here. the only way that you could do it is to retcon her okay, spoilers, I'm sorry. Retcon her demise. It's called To the Death, people. It's not that big a spoiler.
Yeah, two episodes back to back. One called Lucy Miller, the next episode called To the Death.
You kind of know what you're in for, yeah. You'd have to retcon that, and that is, granted, she's an awesome companion on her own, but that cemented her as one of the greatest companions. Yeah. So you would have to undo that, which would, you know, I don't want to do that because it is such a great story. Mm.
I think that was one where, as far as their relationship, she stayed true throughout. We got to see beginning, middle, end with no gaps. In fact, we had her storyline more consistently than we did the doctor she traveled with. We saw her at times when the doctor was missing. We saw her at times when the doctor was presumed dead. She was the anchor throughout. So in order to try and like do a drop in somewhere, it just... I can't see it working without being, you know, without feeling very, very stitched.
Yeah. But, you know, you can't help but put her on a list like this because she is so amazing. And it just, I would love to see her. And besides that, Sheridan Smith's kind of hot. You want to see her on screen. So
kind of.
just a touch. All right. So what are some of the other crazy additions that we've got here?
Well, we were talking about some villains, and I don't always categorize him as a villain so much as he is just an adversary, and hasn't really been used in televised content since back in the Troughton era, but it was just an interesting premise, was the monk, or the meddling monk, or the time meddler, or however you want to spin it. Because it's the idea of another Time Lord out there who is flaunting the laws of time for personal gain. Yet at the times when he really has some of the intellectual battles with the doctor, whether it be in the extent, you know, however you want, for the extended material that you grab a hold of, because he is utilized a lot in Big Finish and a lot of the novels as well, his rebuttal to the doctor at the times when they do get into these wars of words is the doctor is just as guilty of utilizing the laws of time or bending or outright breaking them across his knee whenever necessary. But he says he's doing it for the good of all.
The monk's good.
Rebuttal is that
the greater good,
the greater crusty jugglers, was that he's doing it really as an ego trip.
Yeah,
where the monk is just saying, you know what, you can go ahead and line your ego. I'm going to line my pockets. You know, none of us is clean on this one. But right. It's an interesting dynamic. It's just problematic because it just means that all these times when we've been talking about I'm the last of my race. I'm the only one out there, you know. Well, these Time Lords keep popping out of the woodwork.
Almost as often as the Daleks.
Maybe.
I'm not sure that time lock thing that you got was quite as effective as you thought.
Well, good segue, because here's the last one that I put on the list here, just because it's something that Big Finish played with, but is, I think, a phenomenal premise or an idea to be able to bring in a villain or a spin on a villain that we have not really dealt with to this kind of capacity, and that's the Dalek Time Controller.
Yeah.
The whole idea of what do you do if a military strategist for the Daleks understands, doesn't necessarily always have control of temporal travel, but has the ability to see potential outcomes and therefore manipulate strategies and movements to whatever nefarious gains. And it made for some really, really interesting storylines.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is one of those things that for those of you that don't know, the Dalek Time Controller is a Dalek that can perceive the outcome of things. Like, he's almost like the Dalek counterpart to the TARDIS to a lesser degree, but it's, you know, he understands if I do this, it is going to have, you know, XYZ repercussions, and 500 years from now, I'm going to get exactly the outcome I want. Mm-hmm. And he can play that kind of long game, and it's really terrifying in the Big Finish stuff, just to understand that a Dalek has that kind of power.
Right. Right, and just the ability to be the first set in motion for these butterfly effects that seem so innocuous, but you don't, you know, you come into it at the end of the long game when everything has moved so far along that it's you know, nigh impossible to roll the damages back without doing some crafty time travel manipulation of your own. So it makes for, like I said, some pretty intricate storylines that are interesting to follow. And the scale of them become huge. I think that may be one of the only things that really kind of gets in the way of utilizing this in a televised fashion, is because it does mean that you are creating scenarios that are so far along these paths of despair that in order to create them realistically, in order to give them the gravity that they require, and then come up with these grandiose schemes to reset or restore the damages done, it's a hell of a lot to pack into even something like a two-parter.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, we got a lot of great feedback from the listeners about this. Everybody's got their favorite characters they want to come back. Let's see, Mike on Twitter wrote in and said, Tasha Lim is still out there, which we never got the whole story with her. All we know is that she got turned into a Dalek. And then he agreed with us and said, I really want to see Capaldi and Davros have a yell off, which is what it would break down to when you think about it.
Or a slap fight.
And then on Facebook, we had Ben said that he wants to see the Sisterhood of Karn return.
I think that's pretty viable.
Yeah, especially with the Night of the Doctor. Hmm. And I mean, if you think about it, we're dipping into the news a little bit. The titles of the first two episodes have been released for Series 9. The first one, which we knew, was The Magician's Apprentice. And the second one has actually been released and is called The Witch's Familiar.
Right.
So we've heard the Sisterhood of Karn referred to as witches multiple times. So there's a good possibility for this one.
Yeah, they are the keepers, or at least the founders of a lot of the you know, near magical technology that has been bestowed upon Time Lords.
Yeah.
So they're sort of the principal engineers of these things. Although it sort of falls under mysticism as far as their side of it before it becomes kind of basis of science and development on Gallifrey. So
when you have to have something that's magical, but you don't quite want to call it magic, this is a great plot device to use that. Yep. There.
Stick it in a goblet.
Exactly. So then Alex said the Ninth Doctor, clearly. Yeah, well, that could actually be a lot of fun, seeing the Ninth Doctor and the Twelfth Doctor.
If just a knowing nod to each other.
Yeah, I get it. Well, and then Richard jumped in right after that and said the Eighth Doctor. So, well, all right, so barring the Doctor story, the multi-Doctor stories. But yeah, we've already talked about the rest of the feedback that we've gotten. But yeah, this could be a lot of these are a lot of fun. Some of them, you know, I'm thinking this could actually be something we see very soon. Others are like, yeah, no, it's just, it'd be nice, but no.
Yeah. As far as what we think to benefit the series, that may be the more interesting discussion, and we can go ahead and continue this out on the you know, on the feedback within the, you know, on the forum or on the Facebook comments, post, yeah. Things. Just let us know about the ones you think are from the ones you think are bound to happen. You know, why do you think that's going to contribute to the storyline? Where do you think that's going to be driving Series 9 as far as where it needs to go, or where you think it's already headed based on some of the wheels they've set in motion? So,
yeah.
Okay, let's do some news.
All right. So the first news article that we've got here, and I found this rather interesting, the fact that we talked about it a little bit before about how Peter Capaldi hadn't gotten a TV award for his role as the Doctor. But apparently Samuel Anderson got one for Danny Pink.
He's prettier.
the attack eyebrows are what turned the thing. It's like, if we give it to him, he's just going to break it with the eyebrows. Yeah, I'm not sure quite how I feel about it.
And I was expecting this to say best supporting role or something like that. No, that's not what it says.
It's best male performance. And
in all of television.
Yes, all of television of all time. No, it does credit him both for Doctor Who and for his work in Trolley'd. So,
okay, the Screen Nation Awards celebrate, reward, and promote products and professionals of African heritage.
Okay. So this should just be handed to Idris Elba every year forever.
Yeah. No. Well, he didn't show up this year, so they're like, oh, okay, well, let's give it to the guy.
Let's move down the list.
Damn it.
It's one of those things just struck me as odd that this happened. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh,
a news item.
That's a baby. But the next one that we've got is the Titan Comics are actually going to be doing a multi-doctor crossover event.
Yeah, this should be some interesting stuff. If you have not really gotten into comic content before, but you kind of enjoy the whole premise of crossing the Doctor's time stream, at least spin through this one, because I think this is going to be an interesting take.
Yeah.
And they're not only doing two Doctors, they're going to take 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Yeah. So, I mean, all the fun that we had with Tennant and Smith and then John Hurt, you know, just amplify that now. Because we're going to get all that.
Because John Hurt didn't have, you know, he might have been a little grumpy, but
yeah,
he's not apt to actually knock other Time Lord skulls together.
Well, and these comics are actually really fun, because if you go into them, the Tennant comics, the 10th Doctor comics, are actually structured so that they feel like RTD episodes. Mm-hmm. And then the Matt Smith comics really do feel like the episodes that Matt Smith was in. They're more of the Moffat spin and things like that. So they actually stick to not only the Doctor's personalities, but the way the show felt around them. So I'm really interested to see how they smash them all together and what kind of stories we're going to be getting for the trio.
Right. That just goes along with the fact, I mean, Titan has been a really interesting way of taking some alternate timelines and things. They're also going to be doing the Ninth Doctor miniseries, where you'll actually get Eccleston with an adventure with Rose and Jack Harkness again.
Yay! So
for those of you who wanted just a little bit more of that sort of thing, and you don't really see it happening televised, you've got the story. And this is being written by some of the principal writers who did some of the, like, around the Boomtown episodes. So this is all going to be, it's going to, like Jay said, it's going to have that series feel.
Yeah. So it'll be fun to see how those play out, because, I mean, they're doing a great job with these comics. They really are.
Okay. Yeah, and you'll be getting those. You're going to have to wait a little while, because it's not going to be happening until August of this year.
But
hopefully we'll get some quick panel captures and things like that to sort of tease us along the way.
Yeah. Oh, and then the next news article that we wanted to talk about was actually Big Finish has actually gotten the rights to do some unit stories with Gemma Redgrave as Kate Stewart.
Yes. Yeah, so this broke about a little over a week ago, and it's just going to be going along with, they have done unit series previously, obviously sort of following it with some of the predecessor generation of characters they were utilizing. This time around, we're keeping it sort of present tense, so to speak, and bringing in Gemma Redgrave as Kate Stewart. So this will be the Unit Extinction box set. We have not gotten too many of the details yet about some of the other principal characters or vocal talent that's going to be utilized. We'll put some feelers out to Jason Hagelery and Nicholas Briggs about what they've got in store here. But we should be seeing this, what's our anticipation? I want to say it's November? It's November or December of this year coming.
Yeah, so, November. It's coming out in November 2015, so... We might get a return of Osgood, depending on when they do it.
That's true. They could totally use her.
But the exciting thing about this, and this is the thing that I'm taking away from it, is this is the first time that they have been given the rights to do something from the current series, from the current run of Doctor Who. So this could be a test bed, or, you know, something where they're just trying it out to see how how they can interact with the current series.
Okay.
So we might actually start to see some Big Finish work from the new series Doctors.
Right. I mean, or just at least get a little bit of a plot bleed from one to the other.
Yeah. See it kind of get tangentially involved. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is one of those things that's really exciting, but not quite as story as our not quite as exciting as our big news story, which it came out a couple days ago and kind of spurred the whole discussion that we had tonight.
Kind of broke the internet for a day too.
Yeah, just a bit. Apparently, Michelle Gomez will be returning as Missy for the series opener.
Right off the top. Eating apples and being bat guano crazy. So. Yeah,
but it is great. I mean, as soon as I saw the headline, I was like, you know, I'm not sure if this is a good idea bringing her back so soon. And then I watched the video and I was like, yeah, no, bring her back. I want her back now. Do it now.
This is going to have to be handled very deftly.
Yeah.
We've said before that we want to make sure that they don't overutilize the character so it just becomes a battle of the week kind of thing. But as long as it does make sense, actually, to have her right on the heels of this because everything, we're still dealing with the repercussions.
Yeah.
So I can see that. We also do know, though, that the first two episodes of the season are going to be are linked. They're a two-parter.
Yeah.
So does that mean that she's going to appear in both?
Yeah, that's the thing we don't know. Like, all we know is that she's coming back and she's going to be there for the series opener. So it could just be a brief cameo at the beginning or something like that. Mm-hmm. It could be that she's, peppered throughout the entire thing. We don't know.
Okay.
So all I know is that after watching that video, I'm like, yay, she's going to be back. But one of the things that's gotten pointed out about the video at like the 25-second mark or something, and it's a blink and you miss it kind of thing. Like literally, she switches hands on the apple and stuff and raises her left hand. And you see what looks very, very much like a vortex manipulator on her wrist.
Hmm.
Hitting that point in the off season where people are looking for anything and everything to talk about and trying desperately to come up with some kind of news article. So I don't know if this is, she might have just found something on set. It's like, I'm going to put this on before we record the thing. And I don't know.
Begin the overanalysis.
Yes. No, because we never do that as Whovians. Never happens.
Nope. Don't even know how that works.
All right. And the last, we'll call this one non-news because it really doesn't pertain to anything, but it is awesome.
But excellent. It could be. It could potentially be news later. We could be doing a news bit about something that doesn't become news until it's actually news.
Only on a Doctor Who podcast.
Right.
So John Smith, as he's known on YouTube, has done a number of videos. There was one a while ago, a Doctor Who lock, Doctor Who lock that It seemed very much like Benedict Cumberbatch and Matt Smith were on the TARDIS together and just a great visual effect kind of thing. He did one called Stone, which was basically a 3D maze kind of thing with weeping angels in it and rain. And then there was one, Rain, which before we ever saw Capaldi on screen or anything, it was shortly after his costume got released, I think. He managed to put out a video that showed Capaldi opening the TARDIS and walking out onto a planet that was full of rain and Clara coming out after him. And it looked brilliant. And there were a lot of people that thought that this was the first time we were seeing Capaldi as the Doctor.
Yeah. The quality of the material that he puts out is just of that caliber that we're kind of hoping. It's one of those instances where when the fan created content is of that level and attracts that kind of attention, that there is a bit of a feedback loop that gets back to BBC and says, oh, you know what? This might not be a bad idea.
Almost like the opening title sequence.
Precisely. So what he's done this time around is he's come up with his conceptualization for how you could visualize the process of TARDIS dematerialization going from point to point within space and time. So as it departs from one location, it continues, the camera focus stays with the TARDIS as it leaves one location, enters the vortex, and appears at the next, rather than the perspective of the viewer that just sees her kind of fade out of existence or fade into existence.
Right. It looks absolutely gorgeous, and it's one of those things that it takes you a second to catch on to what you're actually seeing, because we're used to, we've had 50 plus years of seeing, oh, here's the TARDIS, and it fades, and it comes back, and it fades, and it comes back, and then it fades, and it's gone, and then we cut and move to a different location where you see the process reverse, and in this one, you see the camera start to spin around the TARDIS, and then all of a sudden you realize, wait, the background is gone, and we're actually in the vortex now.
Right.
And we've seen the TARDIS the whole time. It's just a great look at the way that things could go.
So chime in on your take on that, because that's something where even if a certain aspect of it ever got used even once, you know, for the sake of, you know, because we know there's been instances where you've had people clinging to the outside of the TARDIS as she dematerializes. So was this what the experience was like? You came back a little frosty.
That's kind of terrifying now. Now it kind of makes sense that Clara's reaction in the time of the Doctor when she gets pulled off. Like, yeah, no, that could be terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, but it well worth the, I think it's a 30-second video, something like that.
40,
but it is
45, yeah, right around there.
But I mean, honestly, you're gonna go watch this one, and then you're gonna want to go and watch everything else this guy has done because they are all brilliant. Mm-hmm. Just my hat's off to this guy because they are amazing. But that's all the news that we've got this week. So what are we talking about next week?
Well, not to sound like we are delving into a familiar topic necessarily. This is one where I think we need to spend a little bit of time determining what the repercussions are for our Clara character going into what we believe is going to be her final season. Mm-hmm. We have an indication from Mr. Moffat that we are going to be seeing her through the entirety of Series 9. But if we know that we have, you know, her character has grown considerably.
Yeah.
Has improved. I'm going to throw that verb out there. The hell with it. I think she's improved dramatically over the last series. But now we have another 13 plus episodes to be able to spend with her before we see her exit. Where does she go from here? What does she represent right now? What are the things that still need to be addressed with her? What can she contribute at this point if we know that there is an end point? We dealt with this with the Pons, too.
Yeah.
Although I think it was slightly different. It was more of an emotional attachment with the Pons, whereas with Clara, it might be kind of intellectual because she's been playing this sort of dance back and forth with stepping up to the Doctor's role at times, you know, in either spoken or implied.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to just take the chance to actually really look into the character. And with all the information that we've got now up through the Christmas special and everything that's happened and everything that we've seen, try and determine who the character of Clara is now, as opposed to who it was that we got in Series 7B. Mm. You know, all different iterations of her. No, even the ones that weren't scripted.
True. Yeah. So what does she represent? Where is she headed? How is she exiting? What is her legacy that she either has established or still is in the process of laying down before we see her end?
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been episode 126 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I want to see Margaret the Slitheen come back.
This is Kier saying, I will pack the Beano for when we see the Slitheen return.
And this is Haley saying, not quite dead yet.
We'll see you guys next week.
That was it.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.